Okay. Hi, everybody, and I trust that Michael, you are seeing my screen. And I just want to make sure I have everything recording the way it should. I'd like to welcome you. I think it's to our 163rd meeting of the Glamour Dissipation of Glamour Group. Of course, it seems these days that all we're doing is attempting to dissipate glamour. Every night we're at work at 8 o'clock p.m. GMT, and then on the weekends at 10 o'clock p.m. And I think we sometimes it's Julia and sometimes it's me, and we're working to bring forward attention, a most necessary attention to this post-election period in which blatant attempts are being made to steal the election through, well, various kinds of lawsuits that don't seem to hold up. At least they seem to be dismissed out of hand, but now it's come to the point where the present occupant of the White House has invited two elector supervisors, or summoned them, not just invite them, summoned them to Washington because he did not quite succeed in having them overturn their vote, which would have disenfranchised the entirety of the Detroit area. And basically taken that state for the Martian red. Detroit area is 80% people of color, and their votes would have been dismissed on some kind of technicality which never was operative before this point. So I guess what I'm saying is that our attention at this time, and it's going to go on for quite a while. We're working every night at this. Our attention is necessary. If we are students of esotericism, which we pretty much are, then we have our meditative techniques, and we have our creative imagination. We have our ability to work in cooperation with the new group of world servers. So, we can do at least a little bit. We can do our part. And my point is that it is still necessary because the blatancy of the attempt of the man in the White House to overturn the election is now evoking, even from Republicans, a real strong, really strong pushback because it's so gauche, it's so crude, and it's in many respects illegal, and it's so selfish and unpatriotic. Let's just call it what it is. And it challenges democracy in every respect. And that will have, in the midst of a terrible COVID surging, to which he pays no attention because his one preoccupation is victory at any cost. In my opinion, he would take down the country so that he could win. It would be a Pyrrhic victory, as you know, say, the kind of victory where nobody's left, but one side can say, "Well, I won," and everybody is destroyed. Anyway, you can see I feel strongly about this, and there's no use pretending that the seeds of fascism have not been planted in the United States. They have been well planted, and it can spread all over the world. So we have to be very vigilant. Okay, then. This great invocation number two. And think of it, of course, in the present context. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with masked intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. We'll do a little reading. It's been a while since we've done reading from the book. Everything has been so concentrated on the election and its aftermath. And but now maybe we can do a little bit of that. And then, continue to meditate on this the dissipation of this blind idealism, which seems to encourage people to make choices which are contradictory even to their health and well-being. It's a kind of blanket of glamour which has been thrown over many susceptible people. Tui and I were seeing a documentary on the Hitler Youth, and later they were older people, and they didn't know what had come over them. They were blind in their adulation of Adolf Hitler, and then later, as those negative forces abandoned him because he was pretty well useless in the end, they suddenly felt relieved of something, and they could see again. And that is, we know we're experiencing a counter pull. We're experiencing pressure from those kinds of forces now. And maybe one day, many of those people who are under the spell of this Martian red, which is so separative, will reassess, and maybe some of them will understand what has come over them in terms of obsession. Because that's really what it is. And Master Moria pointed out, even in the late 20s with his books, that humanity was experiencing an epidemic of obsession. And we can If you have 73 million people voting basically against democracy as we usually understand it, something very sinister is occurring. And we might as well admit it, because in these days before the coming of the Great Conclave, when the externalization of the hierarchy will begin in earnest, it's going to be an inner, at least an inner, psychological war. And who knows what kind of outer warlike distractions could be used if things had gone the wrong way. I want to make just a little bit of a segue here. We'll just read a little. When the will of God, expressed in Shambhala, is focused in the Buddha, the love of God, expressed in the hierarchy and focused through the Christ, and the intelligent desire of humanity, focused through world disciples being, well, it's a term that can mean the initiate of the third degree, but at least the second degree, and membership in the new world, new group of world servers, and the intelligent desire of humanity focused through world disciples. The world aspirants and the men of goodwill are all brought into line, either consciously or unconsciously, then a great reorientation can take place. And this event is something that can happen. So that's the, promising future. But sometimes when you look at things now, you realize that we are in the run-up to such a beneficent reorientation, and that there's so much to go through yet, because the depths of evil still within humanity have not been expunged. And they are surfacing, as you would expect them to surface when Pluto, before the reappearance of the Christ, is scouring the aura of humanity. And when the spiritual will of Vulcan is opposing the tendency of humanity to side with its own dweller on the threshold rather than with the angel of the presence. So something can happen with this kind of alignment. It sometimes seems so far away when we're dealing with the politics and the house cleaning of the moment, when we're dealing with such grasping for power, such hypocrisy, I mean, blatant hypocrisy. We're dealing with it. And it's shocking to see, but okay, that's what's happening. And by the way, this particular link on Zoom is, I think it's what we're using for our daily vigil meditation. So, Michael, if you'd be so kind as to make sure that we have the daily vigil meditation in the chat box in case some people don't have it. So let's go on a little bit here. The first result, I guess, of this alignment will be the illumination of the astral plane and the beginning of the process, which will dissipate glamour. It could be some centuries in the making. First of all, the chaotic condition under the veil of impulsion has to be worked through on the etheric plane. And if you read carefully Rule 10 in the Rays and the Initiations, you'll see Master DK's approach. The evil is driven back onto the astral plane, but of course, it can't be allowed to just remain there, because people will still be wrongly motivated. So the next step, and it will be in the centuries ahead, starting now, yes, starting from the time that DK was working with his seed group project, but continuing, will be the dissipation of glamour, the dispelling of illusion, because humanity is not so mentally focused, really, in large numbers, will come later, but not too much later, because we are dealing with what you call Kama Manas, which is a kind of a blending of desire and mind, with more desire in it than mind. Anyway, but the idea of misinterpretation has to be dealt with. And in this book, Glamour World Problem, he does deal with seven forms of illusion. And we can certainly find ourselves, I think, acting out on one or other of those forms, because we certainly have not dispelled illusion. So anyway, the first result of the alignment will be the illumination of the astral plane and the beginning of the process, which will dissipate glamour. I just want us to realize that we're nowhere near any kind of finality when it comes to the dissipation of glamour. The second result will be the irradiation of the mental plane and the dispelling of all past illusions and the gradual revelation of the new truths of which all past ideals and so-called formulations of truth have only been the signposts. So we have had some formulations, and maybe they have indicated a better way ahead, but they are only indications. First, the glamour, however, because if you look around, you know, you definitely see that that's the stronger of the factors that is leading humanity astray. And certainly humanity is being led astray at this point, especially in the United States, which I think has such an important role to play eventually in the reappearance of the Christ, and hence it has become a target for these maleficent forces. So anyway, people like ourselves, we have to learn how to think with objectivity and avoid being swept even by what DK sometimes calls the more mental glamours. Maybe they relate to certain of the rays, like 3 and 5, especially. So all of even the best formulations are prologue to the new truths. And the old Piscean truths have to fade away, and it's a problem in the United States because of the it is the inheritor, the heir to the Piscean sixth ray civilization. So we can understand that the battle will be especially intense in such a country with a sixth ray personality, which means that it has just loads of six-ray souls. That's what is indicated by that personality ray. The signpost indicates the way to go. Remember what is said of China. It has a motto: I indicate the way. Certainly such a vast nation into which the hierarchical member Confucius will again be, well, if not born, at least will appear, has a big role to play. And a disturbance will be created, which DK says is sometimes appalling to the personality, but of non-lasting moment to the soul. So the signpost does not reveal the goal. It indicates it. It is indicative, but not conclusive. And so, all with all truth up to the present time. So, which truths do we presently hold? And let's get this correct. And are they the be all and end all we suppose them to be? Maybe not. So we have to hold loosely even to our best formulations, knowing they will be corrected, and important addenda will come as the new age develops. The demand is therefore for knowers. Now, you know, we're heading from the age of belief into the age of knowledge. The Aquarian age will be the age of knowledge. Think of it. It is a constellation or sign through which the fifth ray of knowledge is powerfully present and will be the most present eventually. Right now, that ray is most prominent through Leo, believe it or not, and it does divide one person from another in terms of their personalities. But eventually, and maybe in not too long a time, Aquarius will be the dominating sign, offering the fifth ray of knowledge to humanity. So let's become knowers is what it is enjoining us to do. The demand is therefore for knowers and for those whose minds and hearts are open. Now, can't you just feel the influence of Venus when something is said like that? Because Venus represents the union of mind and heart. It has so much to do with the Ajna Center and later with the heart center, and is the most developed or unfolded planet given its particular stage of evolution. This is not to say that Venus is the equal of Saturn or of Neptune or of Uranus, because those are synthesizing planets, and in a way they are more strongly developed, but Venus is more fully unfolded, just the way we could say, okay, there's the Christ. He's not necessarily the highest initiate on this planet, but for his category of development, he is the most unfolded, because he moves so quickly through the power of love, and so Venus, on its own level, moved so quickly, finishing in five rounds what normally would take seven. Now, that is that's an extraordinary feat. So will we become knowers? Well, if we study occultism together, we have a good chance to increasingly become true knowers. That is our goal. And not just idealistic believers, you know. It's good to have belief, especially when the belief is rightly oriented, but it's not the same as being a true knower. So the demand is for knowers, and those who, under the sort of Venusian Jupiterian regime, have their minds and hearts open, who are free from preconceived ideas fanatically held, and from ancient idealisms which must be recognized as only partial indications of great unrealized truths. You know, there are these foolish notions going around, and they are held by people who underneath it all are desperately afraid. And you know, you might recognize such an attitude in what's called the inerrancy of the Bible, or the inerrancy of every word that Muhammad ever spoke. So the whole idea is there can be something, even at this stage of evolution, which is completely without error. You know, is it's an intellectual joke. It just cannot possibly be, and yet people are afraid and they want something to cling to, and they want something that will be true under all circumstances, in all times, in all places, forever. The Bible is it, or the other, you know, in other religions. As DK says, watch out, things are going to become more and more dogmatic. So, free from preconceived ideas fanatically held, and from ancient idealisms, which must be recognized as only partial indications. Now, when will we have the humility, finally, to recognize that we are clinging to partialities and to things which are not at all absolute truths? Truths which can be realized in great measure. And for the first time, these are the new truths, if the lessons of the present world situation and the catastrophe of the war are duly learned, and the sacrificial will is called into play. So these are not small demands. And the, you know, DK did, or the editor did, capitalize the word if, because it's not a foregone conclusion that humanity will learn as it is intended to do. And already we see, using that kind of analogy of the man who swept his house clean of all those devils and then looked the other way only to find it became reinfested with even more. DK warned about that, and we seem to be psychologically in the process of reinfestation. And that would be an esoteric tragedy, and it would set humanity far back. DK says, I've made this practical application and the immediate illustration of the teaching anent glamour, illusion, and Maya, because the whole world problem has reached a crisis today. Now, there he is writing back in the 1930s, the well, you know, over a period of time. Some of the writing, the Second World War had not yet precipitated. Some of it, it looks like it had. But anyway, the whole world problem has reached a crisis today, and we're certainly not out of that crisis. And because its clarification will be the outstanding theme of all progress, educational, religious, and economic, and I wonder if political shouldn't be thrown in there until 2025 AD, a date for which we have but 4.5 years remaining. So that's all I'm going to read this morning, morning here anyway. And we'll, you know, now continue with our reading. And he's going to talk about some practicalities and deal with the three techniques, the technique of the presence, the technique of light, which is what we mostly use, and the technique of indifference applied respectively to illusion, glamour, and Maya. Okay, so let me just get this going here. And this is the end of Michael tells me we're on program 166. I seem to have lost track. So that would mean that the next one would be on the 27th of November. And it would be a evening program at 6 p.m. GMT. And there, you know, there's plenty to read and plenty that we can apply now to the present situation. We are, you know, looking forward to a date, which is December 14th. And by that time, everything having to do with the electors who basically are electing the president, everything has to be settled. And I pointed out to you, I believe, that that is the day of a solar eclipse, and that that solar eclipse is on the moon of the present occupant of the White House. So, you know, perhaps it can mean a settling of the accounts in the direction of the sun and a obliteration of the lunar mass conscious tendencies. Those tendencies obviously will lead humanity in precisely the wrong direction. And, you know, you have seen, I have seen solar eclipses finish things off. Now, sometimes it can mean a great ascension. Oftentimes, when it's the solar eclipse actually takes place right on the sun of the individual, especially in the middle of life or the earlier part of life, there's a rising. Later, it can indicate death, and when it's on the moon, it can wipe things out. And that's what we have to hope for, that these degenerate tendencies, which are so blatantly attempting to subvert democracy and the will of the people, will be wiped out. I'm reminded of George Frederick Handel. He wrote a lot of oratorios, and more oratorios than operas. And one of them was called Samson, and Samson was blinded, and he sings a song, a powerful song called Total Eclipse. It's a very beautiful song, and it indicates his state of mind before he tears down the temple. That was a good use of the energy. And we can hope that the lunar rotary tendencies, which appeal to the mass consciousness so fully, are eclipsed totally. That's what we can look forward to with anticipation. Okay, so let's, this is your turn now, you know, things that are important to you right now or that relate to what we've been studying here a little bit. The alignment is so very important, and it's coming, and it will bring great things, but will they be delayed, and will there become come a worsening of the condition so that people can still see more clearly where this blind idealism, followed by all kinds of manipulations, have led them. How much more of ill nature must occur before people wake up? That is a question, and we don't know the answer yet. Okay, so Michael, if you would field the questions, and I would appreciate that.
I am looking for hands raised and comments or questions in the chat box.
Okay.
And Vera.
Surprise, surprise, huh, Vera? Okay.
And Vera, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. My question about rulers, planetary rulers, like, for example, Venus is exoteric ruler in Taurus, esoteric ruler in Gemini, hierarchical in Capricorn. So what happens, say, for example, when we take Venus, sort of, does it follow Taurus, Gemini? So what happens when the next sign comes in? Does it mean that, for example, if Sun moves from Taurus to Gemini, does it mean that the energy of Taurus is lessened, or?
Well, the energy of Venus, by the way, and let's include Libra there too, right? So there's two exoteric rulers for Venus.
Oh, that's
Taurus,
right.
Taurus and Libra. But it means that if the form of the absorbing individual or group is sufficient, the powers of Venus can be absorbed in a new and higher way if Gemini is also present. And there will be less, as you suggest, of the emphasis upon the lower ordinary Taurian and Libran qualities. The shift, but it doesn't happen for everybody, of course. That's the issue, because you have to be at that stage. Many people can have Venus and Gemini, and they will not live up to the esoteric meaning of it. They might simply be attracted to this person and that person, and, you know, change their affections very rapidly. It's not the same as having that magnetic link between the higher and the lower pairs of opposites. That's why you have to study the person carefully to find out whether they are at the stage when esoteric points of tension related to the planet can actually apply to them. So but let's just suppose that, well, you have the moon sign in Taurus or something, you know, or in Libra. There's a certain rotary tendency to indulge in that sensory life through the moon. But if Venus is in Gemini, there is the opportunity to move away from those earlier tendencies into a kind of magnetic reconciliation of the pairs of opposites. Now, as far as having Venus in Capricorn, a lot of people do. They're just conventional in their affections, or they might be they might seek to have some kind of status through the people with whom they associate. That's just a rather low indication of conventionalized Venus in a fairly conventional sign, unless they have actually moved to that stage. And if they've moved to the stage, then the possibility of bringing in the light supernal along initiatory lines will be theirs. But if you don't study the person, you just don't know how advanced the form is and what it will take. There can be lives which separate the average Venus and Capricorn person to someone who can really begin to sense the light on top of the mountain. So esoteric astrology demands that kind of investigation of the form of the individual who is receiving or could receive a positive indication from one of those higher points of tension. He may not receive that at all. As a matter of fact, the number of people who can really receive the higher Venus in Capricorn are small, because they will be involved in preparing for the third initiation, or in taking the third initiation. They will be involved in that. And that number is small. The people who are conventional and maybe faithful too, I would say, but who are strict in their affections and so forth, would be much greater than those who are experiencing the fifth ray of the third initiation with supernal light upon the mountaintop, and thus it goes.
And
so go ahead.
And from the point of Venus itself, so just put it crudely, say when it's a transition from Taurus to Gemini, doesn't mean that Venus goes to the switchboard and says, "Now I'm transmitting Gemini." So,
well, I think Venus is always transmitting what it is, but there are certain abilities to receive the fullness of what it is that are found in the higher signs. In other words, all of what Venus is, the incentive towards knowledge and all of that, maybe some of that is in Taurus, but the whole idea of being able to magnetize the Antikorana is pouring forth from Venus all the time. But if it's in Gemini and you are equal to it, there's a greater possibility that you can absorb that particular higher aspect of Venus. So Venus doesn't change. Venus is what it is. But your absorption of it as a form is facilitated if you have certain positions in which Venus is found. That's number one. And if you have the ability, because of a lot of work in the past, to be equal to that point where absorption is possible. So Venus, it is what it is, but who are you as a form to receive the higher points of tension connected with it? And the place where Venus is found will be indicative of what you could absorb if you are adequate for the absorption.
Go ahead, please. And the same applies for signs themselves, like Taurus is what it is, but at that specific time, there is an enhanced possibility for us to.
It's the form that counts. TK says the form has to be in the proper condition to receive different aspects of the sign or constellation. The lower form just can't receive them. The higher the form, the higher the always broadcasted qualities of the sign can be more received. And finally, shambolic illumination, the mother of illumination, which is Taurus, you've got to be an initiate of the third degree to be able to get that out of Taurus and more. Before that time, you just cannot absorb its particular quality, the higher qualities which are always there, if I can explain it that way.
Thank you very much for stretching my mind a little bit further. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Thank you, Vera. Thank you. Okay. Okay, friends, anything that you want to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You might consider that as being in tune with or harmonizing between these different energies, vibrations, whatever term is most suitable to you.
Yeah, and we can't really harmonize unless the quality of our form is of a sufficient frequency to allow passage of the higher points of tension associated with these planets. They will just be like a dumb note, you know. Someone else over here is absorbing them, but you are not, because whoever, just don't have the necessary frequency for attunement to the higher points of tension associated with the planet or with the sign, which someone else who has that higher, that higher frequency can absorb. So, it's the form, and let's keep improving and refining the form. And then we will, I'm thinking about the election, of course. The petals of the egoic lotus, okay? Now, the fifth petal is a Leo Scorpio petal. If you start with Aries at petal number one, which is legitimate to do, and you can, I've elaborated about this in my book on the egoic lotus, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, fifth petal. And then when you look at petals in the Hall of Learning, they are water petals. They started out with Cancer, petal number four, Scorpio, petal number five. So there's that doubling up of Leo and Scorpio. And then Pisces, where sacrifice actually begins to be more deliberate, petal number six. But that doesn't mean that petal number six is not also a Virgo petal. So here we are with this petal number five struggle. And it's one of the most turbulent of the most turbulent period in the life of the soul, because it is the big change for those who will make the change from a kind of a self-congratulatory egotism into humility through suffering. Now that is where our present occupant of the White House focuses, as far as I can see. I would say there are three great phases in the fifth petal. The first is egotism. The second is humiliation. And the third is humility. Now, obviously, what's happening in the transition of this individual is he's moving from emphasis upon egotism into a forced humiliation, which will bring a kind of humbling, which will lead to a truer humility that is necessary in someone who has suffered, fallen out of the tower in terms of the tarot deck, and is beginning to tread the path of aspiration. Now, some people may never do that. They may veer off onto the left-hand path of dedicated selfishness, and they will not make it into the stage of true aspiration. And even if they do, they could relinquish it, and it could become selfish aspiration, and they can even achieve the second degree and then veer off. So there is a perilous work transition in the fifth petal. Ideally, the egotism, which is characteristic of the fifth petal, will be undermined by the scorpionic energy that is also found there, because Scorpio will undo Leo. And if I were to I'll just do it this way. Esoteric astrology, and it's 3:32. Oopsie, unfortunately, that's not going to work. I have externalization and the great invocation, and now I'll try again. And let's see what it says down here about Leo seeks release in Scorpio, right here. This is where you see it. And that Leonian attitude, where you are the master, you know, and everybody else, let other forms exist, I rule, you know, the sort of negative ordinary mantra of Leo is undone by the sting of death and humiliation that comes in via Scorpio. We are witnessing that psychologically, and it's playing out as a drama on the stage of politics and general social unrest in maybe the person who's the most powerful individual, at least has the trappings of that in the world. So there's a psychological dimension to all of this, and you just have to go through the lessons of the petal on which you are particularly focused. It doesn't mean you're only focused on one. There can be some anticipations ahead. You're getting into the next petal just a little bit, and you haven't quite left everything behind you. But it's a big trap, this fifth petal, and some people just don't make it out in the right way. They become confirmed egotists, and that will lead to the left-hand path, unless they are properly humiliated in Scorpio. Okay. What else? Anything?
excuse me. I am not seeing any hands raised or any Oh, Olivia's hand just went up.
Okay, Olivia, please go ahead.
Yeah, Michael, I just wanted to say how much I agreed with you, what you were saying at the beginning of our webinar, because this is still such a serious time. Until we get these votes certified, the court cases are just ridiculous. They've all been lost. Trump has lost like 28 cases or something already. But the pressure being put on these people that are the canvassers or electors, when the president of the United States calls you up and tells you, first of all, how many people get that call, and if you're a Republican, that's meaningful, and then inviting you to come to, or, well, it's more than an invitation, come to the White House, and all that, the pressure is huge on these two individuals, and others may be added later. Exactly. Senators haven't been able to stand up to Trump. So here are these two people.
Here are just people, and
Yeah.
flattered in one respect and pressured in another.
Yeah, terrified in another way if
Yeah,
they don't
that's
do
true
it.
too. That's absolutely true. So the vigilance obviously is required of us. You would say, well, we're standing guard, you know, we're doing the same thing over and over again. We're thinking of the same kind of possibility for the plan really to manifest and for soul qualities to emerge. We're doing that day after day, but it is necessary because there is such a pathological will to win, even if everyone was destroyed and the country destroyed. Mm-hmm.
We persist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so getting these votes certified is just so key, because then they can't take the election away from Biden. But then yeah. Trump, with all of his vengeance and his hatred and his and inhumiliation, then we still have that danger point, because as long as he's in power, and I think you mentioned one time, you know, that he had this idea of attacking Iran and Pence and some of the people. I mean, he doesn't really listen to anybody, but they did talk him out of it. But if he's been horribly humiliated, which may also be the reason why he doesn't want to go to Mar-a-Lago for Thanksgiving, is that some of his cronies are coming up to him and, you know, talking to him and saying, maybe you should
yeah.
hang it up. Well, he doesn't want to hear that. So
yeah.
he has this
yeah.
bunker mentality right now. And if he's humiliated, I mean, it's not over until January 20th. And this idea of trying to bomb Iran or do something horrible for the country and leave Biden in a terrible mess, you know,
yeah.
we
it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible.
Well, and you know, one of the real scoundrels in the whole thing, who was pardoned, you know, the dirty tricks man, basically he said, well, just declare martial law. That's it. If you lose, declare martial law. And the guy meant it. So when you declare martial law, everything is suspended. And that can be, you know, some kind of last resort, and then the battle royal will come to the states, a constitutional crisis and all the rest. So yes, so we, you know, we have 2 months left, and we have to be, you know, as a matter of fact, in a way, 2 months from today, isn't it, because it's January the 20th, and here is November the 20th,
mm-hmm.
at least here in Europe. So 2 months, and one has to be never let the guard down interiorly,
right.
esoterically.
Right.
We cannot let the guard down. Yeah.
And stand in that will to good and bring in the will, because that we still are in this battle. And so we just have to, you know, stand together and not let up, keep that vigil and keep that strength, because it's a power battle that's going on right now.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. And yeah, so we certainly recognize our responsibility. I think,
yeah.
you know, whoever's here, we all recognize our responsibility, and we will, you know, we're just little people, but we will carry through the best we can, given the tools that we have, of which occult meditation is a powerful tool. So
yeah.
that's what we'll do. Well, thank you for your thoughts, Libby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, onward, onward.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank
All
you,
right.
Michael.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, other thoughts, anybody, before we call it?
Yes, Leslie put a link in the question box, and I put that in the chat box for everyone. I'm not sure what the link is for, but it's there. And then she wrote, Duet, O Death, Where is Thy Sting? By George Frederick Handel.
Yes, yes. O Grave, Where is Thy Victory? Yes, well, you know, if you want to know what channeling really is, then take a look at The Messiah as a piece of music written in 21 days. That's the real thing coming through, and it has inspired millions ever since the time it was created. You know, just think how much poorer the human psyche would be without a work of art like the Messiah, or let's say the St. Matthew Passion by Bach. One of his passions was lost. He wrote a number of passions. I think, I forget which one is lost. Is it the St. John that exists? Anyway, St. Mark. Anyway, Bach wrote a number of them, and one of them, unfortunately, is lost. But we do have the St. Matthew Passion, another great work of art. What does he say? Ah, yeah, Leslie, I have seen the face of God. Yeah, that's it. That's it, Leslie. Thank you for that. Yeah, well, you know, Handel was a Pisces, and I don't know what his rising sign was. He was born in the same year as Bach, 1685, I believe, but lived a little longer. And, you know, their two approaches to Baroque music is just a total treasure for humanity. So he was obviously used as some kind of channel for heavenly music at that time. I think, you know, probably Bach knew more about the secrets of harmony and all the rest of it, but Handel was glorious in his own way. And we have something, you know, who can fail to be inspired by the Hallelujah Chorus of Handel? Ever since some English king, was it George? I'm not sure. Ever since he spontaneously stood up when hearing this piece of music, people have been standing up ever since to honor. Well, it's almost like it's a hymn to Sanat Kumara. So we can't lose those treasures. They inspire. They inspire us. I've seen the face of God. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Leslie. Anything else, friends?
That appears to be it.
Okay.
In preparing for the Dissipation of Glamour meditation.
Right. Good. So it's pretty much what we did recently. It's the blind idealism. Of course, I think that's the great danger there, where people just lose their head, you know, and they are overcome by this cloud of glamour, which is deliberately focused upon them, and they're helpless. And then the demagogues take hold and manipulate the situation, pulling forth even more of the strictly emotional blinding response. So let's meditate. And yeah, let's do that. So we won't, well, maybe I will. There's not so many of us, you know. It's in the silence. The names of those assembled: Anna, Annette, Catherine, Cindy, Frederick, Gretchen, Hilda, Karen, Catherine, Leslie, Lynette, Mariana, Martha Mickelson, and Martha Dupont, no, Martine Dupont, excuse me, and Miere, Miro, and Natalie, Livia, Risto, Vera, Zenaide, and Veronica, Tuya, Michael, and myself. And I think Anne also from the Vietnam group. And we use the long-armed cross, you know, the protective cross with this formula. As a soul, I work in light and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work and from that point, I never move. Tracing the light with this cross of divinity and a greater cross standing in front of the entire group. A great astronomical symbol, eventually a symbol of synthesis. As is customary, we bring the lights together, the light of matter, the light of mind, and we align also with the light of the soul. Bringing it too onto the mental plane, where three lights become one light, the fusion of the two lesser lights with soul light. Let's get the feeling of that. And we say together, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. We're going to use the words of another formula, and as we use the words, we visualize the great searchlight emanating from the three lights combined, and we turn that searchlight upon the astral plane where the major trouble can be found. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And we invoke the spiritual will to strengthen our beam, which at once detects glamour and helps to dissipate it. We name this glamour as we empower the beam with power upon its beam. The light is focused on the goal. The goal is to deal with the glamour of blind idealism, exacerbated by cynical manipulation. Think about that, how that works in the world. Blind idealism, manipulated by cynical demagogues. It takes us all the way back to Atlantis when the dark forces intervened and worsened the condition of glamour. We utter the words of power before we dwell upon them in the silence. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of blind idealism, exacerbated by cynical demagogic manipulation. The power of our united light negates the quality of this glamour from affecting humanity. And the power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour. And we will now spend 5 minutes in silence, penetrating into the glamour, producing its weakening and dissipation. And helping our fellow human beings be rid of this pall which has been thrown over their consciousness because they are susceptible. Basically, we are working in the realm of the sun, and we are attempting to dissipate that which is the product of the prison of the soul, namely the moon. So now we withdraw our beam from off the astral plane, back into the triple light as one, and redistribute that light of matter, vitality, of mind, and of soul. And we continue our vigilance so that the blindness of people caused by the glamour that has been thrown over them, really, can be dissipated. We continue. And we sound the Om three times. One for each of the vehicles of the personality, in relation to which some degree of assistance has come through our efforts. Thank you, friends. And tonight at 6 p.m., we will have the continuation of Cosmic Fire. And, of course, I'll do my best to relate it to the ongoing situation, because we are dealing with the lower fires and their purification. Right now, they are not pure. And the veil of impulsion, the veil of distortion, and the veil of separation, as well as the veil of aspiration, are still acting obstructively upon the truth symbolized by the sun. And then at 8 p.m. GMT, we continue with our vigil meditation. So two more events today, and maybe some of you can join us. That'd be great. Meanwhile, the whole communications group is wishing you well, many blessings, lots of love, and stay alert, stay alert, stay alert. Because the, hate to say it, but the other side is as alert as it is within them to be. I hate to dichotomize it all, but as Christ said, and meaning situations like this, I come to bring not peace, but the sword. And it is the sword of discrimination which an awakened consciousness must see. So we continue our work. This will be available before long on Makara, the way so many of the programs that we all have been giving are there. Our colleague BL gets them up on Makara, and then Harold Moses is putting quite a few of these up on the YouTube Moria Federation Esoteric Education. Just be alert to those who may benefit from this slightly more advanced way of looking at things, and may be willing to break out of their dogmatism just a little bit to see what it's like from the point of view of an expanded ring past knot. See you before long, and thank you for being here and meditating all together. We'll talk to you soon.